you here? Is it on? Yeah? Okay. Thank you, Nana. And I also would like to thank Rana and Katrine, the other two organizers of the event, and all the wonderful staff at the house as well for their hospitality. Okay. Good. All right. We left from here on this little boat. Normally, we would have sailed directly. We changed directions, but arriving there, we were arrested by the police. We didn't have any money left, so we got back on the boat illegally. You can't even imagine. In Bari, we stayed in a camp. Then I decided to go to Rome. I hope I can get papers. In Naples, it was the same thing. I was always caught, and they made me get off the train. Once I got to Marseille, there was no work, nothing. From 8 a.m. the whole day, you just walk. Honestly, I couldn't stand it, so I decided to leave. I arrived in Libya. Anything could happen. That's where I worked for a year after my release. Unfortunately, we headed towards the Atlantic. There was sand everywhere. It's impossible to live there. I spent 5 years there. I spent 2 years there working in the fields. I found nothing. It turned bad. Where they send young people under age 18. I was caught in Lampedusa. I fled, but I took the wrong direction and I was arrested by the police. I really needed that paper to travel. The road I took was much longer. It's a dangerous zone where the soldiers watch the wall. And jailed 4 months in a few days, we left from here. These pieces of story are from the installation, the Mapping Journey Project, made between 2008 and 2011 by the artist Bushra Khalili. It consists of 8 single-channel videos, each one long static shot, in which we see a hand tracing on a paper map the complex trajectories of movement across Africa, West Asia, and Europe, and within Israel, Palestine, that each individual narrates, their faces unseen. The installation also includes 8 silkscreen prints entitled The Constellation Series, in which these routes are represented as or translated into stellar constellations. It's a beautiful and thoughtful work of map making shape from the perspective of individuals forced to cross borders illegally. As Diana Nawi points out, quote, the literal maps are employed only to be subverted. The blue water and multicolored countries that abut one another become graphic abstractions as each protagonist draws lines across and through them, unquote, quote, draws lines multiple times as people loop back around, come and go, get stuck, retrace, return, and start again. The constant moving of the hand, the marking and tracing of roots in the experiences of them, situate movement in the agency of the person to whom the hand and the story belong, while identifying the force of abstraction in the various nations and their borders constructed out of the history of war, empire, and statecraft. In situating movement in this way, guided always by hand and voice, the work avoids repeating the constructs in which individuals who move within and against those borders are usually framed. Khalili started, she said, by, quote, asking myself a simple question, how to translate a subjective geography, challenging borders and restrictive conceptions of the nation state. Her answer is, she writes, and I quote, less a proposal to map the geography of migration and more about mapping resistance. And it's on the point of mapping resistance that I would like to focus on my little time here. There are 2 aspects of the work that might be relevant for our conversation today. One is Khalili's attempt to view the border crossing from the standpoint of the individual person moving and crossing, without turning that movement into a story of unbearable calamity or suffering born through the heroism of the individual, of the innocent individual, the primary tropes of the popular media and the humanitarian appeal. Rather, the narratives in which the I is always embedded in the we with whom I'm on the move and the we I encounter, read like utilitarian directions for travel, affect flat, the entirety of the repressive apparatus of European, North African, and Israeli border control rendered by its objective effects on the person who never moves alone. I fled. We had to change direction. I was caught. I was arrested by the police. We stayed in a camp. We left from here. The second aspect of the work that might be relevant to our conversation today is in part a result of the first, and that is the extent to which the scene of exclusion and the landscape of violence, denigration, and death that Nicholas de Genova describes as, quote, a spectacle of migrant illegality, is precisely not spectacularized. It's not only that Khalili refuses to show that scene, which is nonetheless always very present in terms both brutally and subtly haunting it. It's that in its place, we see how completely illegality is woven into the seams and sinews of the minute details and practicalities of moving in these stories from Africa to Europe. How routine, normalized, unsensational, or unexceptional that illegality is. In Khalili's cartography, for people lacking means, social standing, and state authorization, there is no migration, put it in scare quotes, or movement across nation-state boundaries that does not involve becoming a fugitive. A fugitive from the law, a fugitive from the nation-state, and possibly also a fugitive from the whole geopolitical order that structures markets for labor and structures polities for governance through national citizenship. For Khalili, as for others who share this way of seeing, the language of resistance keeps common cause with the perspective of individuals forced to cross borders illegally. In other words, she focuses the cartography on that constellation of force and meaning, and critically questions the presumptions and divisions that dominate state policy in the popular media, whose terms are signified in the words and state-sponsored identities, illegal immigrant, economic migrant, refugee, asylum seeker. To see migration from south and east to north and west, or between Israel and Palestine, we can talk about that case and how it functions in this work, as a mode of resistance, is to see it, as Khalili notes, as, quote, lived expressions of political positions that refuse state control and power and the restrictions of nationalisms, regionalisms, and ideology. Khalili's emphasis on lived expressions of political positions is key, as often these political positions are less explicit than implied, more emergent in the sense in which Raymond Williams used that term, or embedded in the movement itself. In the US black radical tradition, this mode of existence through escape, flight, and illegal movement embraces the language of fugitivity. It embraces the language of fugitivity because it is a radical tradition built up from and tied to still the vantage point of the enslaved, who were, and even imagining themselves as themselves, in violation of the law and social order which attained them as property belonging to another. Everything about slave life was bound up with parsing what was permitted and what was forbidden, with living in the seam of illegality. Remember that in slaveholding societies like those in the Caribbean and the United States, the slave was treated as a complete non-person, a non-human human being, and was legally prohibited from free association, from kinship and all other forms of civil and political right, from reading and writing, from thinking their own thoughts, from strategizing collectively, from keeping secrets, and certainly from travel without permission, and the paperwork to prove it. Fugitivity was a general condition of the life of the enslaved in at least two senses. First, simply, merely, but in this merely, of course, lies everything, the slave, in not being the property she was presumed and held to be, was always, already, and forever a fugitive from this private property regime with its elaborate legal and social riggings, always already running away from it, always already against it, always already an outlaw in the eyes of the law. Second, even in Brazil and the Caribbean countries where there were great slave revolts and large, well-organized, self-governing runaway or Maroon communities, which was not the case in the United States, the most common resistance to slavery was self-emancipation and flight, even if you just escaped to the woods for a little peace and quiet for a couple of hours. In this way, fugitivity became an epistemology or even an ontology of Black resistance as everyday life, which also bound this resistance up historically with illegality and criminality, a bind still very much operative today. If you think that border policing is harsh now, it's worth studying the history of the treatment of fugitive slaves who were everywhere in the Americas, hunted down without mercy. In his book, Freedom as Marinage, Neil Roberts writes, and I quote, "Freedom is grounded in acts of flight that are episodic, durable, and overlapping. For myself, I've been especially interested in changes to political consciousness and changes in the political mise-en-scene itself that running away produces, or that happens in flight, that happens in that political interval between, you could think of it this way, the no longer and the not yet, the no longer putting up with what is, and the not yet something quite better. Sometimes what changes in that interval is that episodic flight, what Roberts calls truancy, becomes more durable. In the US case, as W.E.B. Du Bois showed in Black Reconstruction, it was the mass flight of the enslaved from the plantations that ended slavery and won the Civil War for the North, whose objective, despite white myths still told, was not the abolition of slavery or the emancipation of the slaves, but unification of the nation state around industrial capitalism rather than around plantocracy. There were around 4 million Black slaves in the US South alone at the start of the Civil War. And when they walked out of the fields, in the workshops, in the kitchens, in the quarters, at first gradually and then in a surging, thoughtful movement, when they inaugurated what W.E.B. Du Bois called, quote, the general strike of the slaves, they abolished the system of plantation capitalism that relied on their bonded labor by abandoning it. What Du Bois is describing is a revolution by flight. He writes, quote, it was a general strike against the conditions of work that involved directly in the end perhaps 500,000 people. They wanted to stop the economy of the plantation system, and to do that, they left the plantations. The slave entered upon a general strike against slavery by the same methods that they had used during the period of the fugitive slave. They ran away to the first place of safety, unquote. For thousands, the first place were the Union Army camps, where the runaways received a new name, contraband of war. Contraband of war, or confiscated property, is what the Army officially called this mass of poor, starving, mistreated general strikers who were put to work and eventually emancipated once, it should be emphasized, they were armed in a major fighting force. But perhaps it would be more accurate to describe the contrabands, as they were called, in the language of fugitivity, the language in which they were in revolt, property stealing itself and on the move. These fugitives had plans for a way of life without enslavement, disenfranchisement, and racial subordination. For a brief moment, the Reconstruction Plan, which Du Bois called abolition democracy, seemed possible, and flight or fugitivity was a necessary preparation for it. The failure of that reconstruction of abolition democracy then set the terms for the militarized racial capitalism we confront today, just as it bequeathed to the word abolition, once the byword for finality, what Kudzanai Churai last night called a usable past, and gave to abolition its current political meaning of urgent, democratic, social, and political change that has not yet occurred. If we presume that fugitive migrants and various degrees of militancy and political planning have entered upon a general strike against the conditions of work and life in which we are all entwined. Then the question becomes not how to manage this migration or create more welcoming laws to accommodate it, or even possibly not to master a critical understanding of it. The question then becomes, what would constitute the terms of the abolition democracy for which we would all join such a strike or collectively struggle together? Thank you.